A ceasefire in Myanmar after the massive earthquake early in the year didn't last long. By June, rebels and the military regime were back at war. The fighting is vicious. European countries are supporting the rebels, but China is providing air power to batter them. There's no end in sight to this civil war, but the regime has scheduled elections for late December, the first elections since they overthrew the government of Aung San Suu Kyi in 2021. Fiona McGregor is senior producer at Al Jazeera of a remarkable documentary, Myanmar, War with the Junta, that takes us behind the lines on both sides to shed new light on the state of the war and the country. Fiona joins me now from Thailand. Welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thank you.
Fiona, just roughly, who has the upper hand at the moment, the regime or the rebels?
At the moment, the regime and the military have been taking back a lot of territory. So in that sense, they do seem to be on the ascendant in terms of their recent military successes. But, you know, we are still seeing the rebels, you know, having certain victories.
And how much territory do the rebels actually hold at the moment?
That's a little bit of a tricky one because, you know, things are going backwards and forwards and there's quite a lot of contested areas, but still a significant amount of the country.
How did you get the footage for that documentary? How did you get footage behind the regime's lines of what is being done there? It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's most sort of notorious in a way about this conflict is how successful the military has been in stopping information getting out and shutting down internet. And, you know, so really very few people who are outside the country have had, you know, a chance to see what's going on inside. So that, you know, it's something that we very much focused on, and I think is a very, you know, important rare aspect of this documentary. Obviously, for security purposes, it would be a little bit difficult for me to share it with you. It would be risky for me to share exactly how things got out, how we got that information. But it did, you know, we have some very, very brave journalists in the country. There are, you know, soldiers like you have in conflicts across the world, you know, taking videos whilst they're you know, involved in action. But because, it, you know, in Myanmar, it's so difficult to get that footage out, that was the big challenge for us. So it's taken a lot of effort and bravery of different people to get that out and to be able to share it with the public.
And it seems to me that a lot of that footage is taken with a telephone. And I'm wondering whether the humble mobile phone is just changing the way in which wars can be reported, particularly wars where the regimes involved, and I'm thinking of Gaza as much as Myanmar, are determined that information not get out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see this, you know, as reporters, you can see, I think, in, as you say, Gaza, in Ukraine, you know, evidence is being captured as it's happening. And I think, you know, I think it's hard to say how that's going to play out in international law and so on in future. But, you know, we're seeing, yeah, for the first time, almost live recordings of these incidents. So there's no kind of getting away from that. It's not people going back months or years later saying, you know, what happened. That evidence is there on people's phones, as you say.
The documentary has a rhythm of moving from sort of undercover footage to quite formal interviews in polished rooms of generals setting out their objectives. It goes back and forth between the two. It's a very interesting rhythm.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you point that out. I mean, I think that's in some ways, that's quite reflective of how war happens, doesn't it? You do have generals sitting in polished rooms making decisions. You do have, you know, some of the footage was, or some of the interviews were done in kind of secretive locations because we had to be, because the people were, you know, that were speaking to us were taking great risks to do that. And then, of course, you have the frontline footage. So that's, you know, I'm really glad that's come across in the documentary, these many different aspects of how wars are fought and planned out and played out.
One of the principal themes of the documentary is the efforts being made by the regime to try to find more soldiers. What's happening there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a very important, a very key aspect in the documentary, and it's a very important part of what is going on in Myanmar just now. I mean, if you look at this time, you asked me at the start of the program who had the upper hand. If you asked that a year ago when we were, you know, doing early filming for this, it really looked like the rebels were on the ascendancy at that time. You know, since then the military have introduced and really brought into force this forced conscription policy, in which they are, as you see in the film, literally dragging people off the streets at times to fight on the front lines of their war. But the problem is that most of these people do not want to be there, and they're not trained soldiers. So they're relying on this, you know, this very weak, reluctant to fight soldiers to try and keep the momentum going. And it's very unclear how to do that for.
And there's also the fact that so many people are deserting from the regime's ranks. Who are the deserters?
Absolutely. I mean, you're seeing deserters at different levels. In the documentary, you'll see us speaking to people. We've got officers there. We've got some quite senior people who were sort of forced to take part in things that they just found abhorrent. I think, you know, for a lot of people, seeing the violence, the brutalities done against ordinary civilians was too much, even for these sort of trained men who were, you know, born and raised to support the military. So you have those kind of deserters, but then you also have, as I was mentioning, these people that have been forced to fight, that, you know, literally are coming up against people from their own villages at times. And so when they get the excuse, you know, sorry, get the opportunity, they are fleeing to join the other side. So you've got that kind of the two elements, the ones that professional soldiers who are just so disgusted by what they've seen going on. And then you have the people that didn't want to fight in the first place. And I think that's a real, you know, weakness for the Myanmar military.
And a third category of police, an extraordinary number of police who have deserted.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And in a way, that, you know, that makes sense, because although, you know, they are also part of the security forces, you know, they're very closely aligned with the military, you know, they're not all trained soldiers, you know, and they were being ordered, you know, to take part also in these brutalities against civilians. So yes, they're also turning their backs on the regime.
I don't know whether standards is the right word, but I can't think of a better one for the moment. But by the standards of civil wars of this kind, of which we have seen many, is this particularly brutal? Is it just sort of routinely cruel?
I think all wars are brutal, but I think the consistent, you know, targeting of civilians that we're seeing here, and of their own people as well. You know, obviously Myanmar's got this long history of civil war, which traditionally really was carried out in the ethnic minority areas. And what we're seeing in this conflict is absolutely countrywide, and they are, you know, targeting civilians everywhere. So it's exceptionally brutal. I think I'd feel uncomfortable saying one war was more brutal than another, but it's certainly.
Yes, on reflection, I think I'm with you there. It is a grim thing to say, but it's exceptionally brutal even by the standards of civil wars. On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Fiona McGregor, who is a senior producer of Myanmar Exposed, a series of reports by Al Jazeera Investigative Unit, and of their most recent documentary, Myanmar, War with the Junta. Fiona, the rebels, who are they? To what extent do they represent the government overthrown by the military in 2021?
Okay, so as I just mentioned earlier, the fighting is happening across the country. There were already in Myanmar very established ethnic arms who have a long history of fighting against the Myanmar military for degrees of autonomy, and who are very well trained and very experienced. After the coup, what we also saw were in, you know, central Myanmar, these areas that didn't have a long tradition of civil war, what are called People's Defence Forces springing up. And they, many of them went and got training with these ethnic armed groups. So you have this kind of coalition of these established armies and these newer People's Defence Forces fighting together and forming coalitions, you know, to take on the military. And, you know, that's, I think that's been one of the reasons that the military struggled so much. It's never had fighting on so many fronts at the same time. So it's been extremely stretched on that front.
And the former government of Aung San Suu Kyi survives as a government in exile?
Well, the NLD, her party, was disbanded and by the military, and she was imprisoned along with her her president. The NUG, the National Unity Government, sort of has been working, you know, from exile to try and act as a government in exile, but it certainly doesn't have kind of international recognition in the same way that the military has managed to hold on to, despite, you know, a lot of objections to how it's operating.
Now, it's promised elections. What's the view of these elections? Does anybody have much confidence that they'll actually represent the feelings of the country?
Within Myanmar, no. And I think internationally, certainly, Europe, even within ASEAN, there's, you know, no serious belief that these could possibly represent the will of the people of Myanmar. There is some support for the elections from China and I think Russia. You know, Myanmar military's international political allegiance is there, but in terms of people, you know, watching it as a supposed democratic process, no, I don't think there's any confidence there at all.
I note that the United Nations, Human Rights Watch and Western governments have condemned the whole thing as a sham. But why does the junta want to hold this this sham?
It promised after the coup that it would hold elections relatively quickly. It hasn't been able to do that because of the ongoing fighting. It's taking this opportunity to try and hold elections in as much of the country as it can do, although it's absolutely not managing to do that. And Min Aung Hlaing, the senior general, he's acknowledged that they won't be able to hold elections countrywide. Also, you know, they're not allowing key opposition parties to stand. So it does seem very much kind of window dressing from their perspective.
And they think it's worthwhile, even though all of those international agencies and a number of countries have already condemned the whole process as a sham. Even so, it's worth them doing.
They seem to think so, yes. As I said, it's hard to see that it would be more than window dressing. It might, you know, it might allow China, for example, to say, right, we can see there's been a clear transition at this point, and there's now what they might recognise as a legitimate government in force.
But as I understand it, to even criticise the process of the election is a crime.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that law was just brought in July, and there's already been 100 people or more, I think, arrested and charged under this law. So even, you know, for liking Facebook posts on social media that might have been critical of the upcoming elections, people are being arrested for that. And, you know, I think I was hearing that even people who have been displaced by the war are coming under pressure from the military, saying, right, you have to turn out and vote for us. So, yeah, there's huge amount of pressure.
How many people have been displaced by the fighting?
I think it's something like 3 million people. It's huge.
Fiona, you've lived in Myanmar for a number of years.
Yeah.
You make documentaries about it. You know it very well. You know the state of the fighting intimately. What do you think is going to happen in that country? Where's it heading?
I think one thing that people that have spent a lot of time looking at Myanmar know is that making firm predictions is not wise. I think what I can say is it's unlikely that we're going to see any form of sustained peace for the foreseeable future, that this war is going to run on. And even if the military are, as we're seeing at the moment, gaining, you know, some ground ground again. There are other parts of the country, we see in Rakhine State in particular, where they really don't have any control at all, apart from a couple of very small areas. They have never managed to control the whole country. You know, there's always been civil wars of some sort going on. And I think that's going to carry on. And it's a very hard thing to say when you're seeing people, you know, fighting. It's not, you know, who believe in this cause that they are fighting for, and they don't want to be written off. And I'm not writing people off, but I just don't see that. I don't think we will see peace in the foreseeable future.
Fiona, thank you for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thank you, David.
I've been speaking to Fiona McGregor, senior producer with Al Jazeera's investigative unit, about their new documentary, Myanmar, War with the Junta, that can be seen now on Al Jazeera's YouTube channel.